They gathered in numbers as he rode. The terrain began undulating, opening up in gullies, rising in ridges. He rode through narrow passes and rifts, down a canyon with walls of crumbling rock. The road took a bend to the left, with a narrower road to the right. Richard took the horse to the left, remembering what the guard had told him. Out of the clearness of his mind, a thought came to him. Richard brought the horse to a skidding halt. He looked off down the right road. He thought about it a minute, then pulled the reins to the right, urging the animal on, down the right-hand road. Dark and Rawl had told him he was free to go where he pleased, had even let him have a horse so he might go where he wished. Maybe Dark and Rawl wouldn't mind if Richard borrowed his dragon. Letting the horse pick its own way, he watched carefully all about, resting his hand on the hilt of the sword. Surely a red dragon wouldn't be hard to spot. There was no sound but the horse's hooves on the hard ground. Richard didn't know how far it was, and rode for a long time among the rubble of boulders on the canyon floor. He began to worry that the dragon was gone, that maybe Rawl himself was riding it somewhere, maybe to get the box. He didn't know if his present course was a good idea, but it was the only idea he could think of. A blinding burst of fire erupted with a deafening roar. The horse reared. Richard leapt off, landed on his feet, and scrambled behind a boulder as the air was filled with flying stones and fire. Shards of rock ricocheted past his head. He heard the horse thud to the ground and smelled burnt hair. It screamed a terrible neigh until there was a snapping of bones. Richard crouched tighter against the rock, afraid to look. As he listened to the periodic roar of fire, the breaking of bones, the ripping of flesh, Richard decided that this had been a very stupid idea. He could hardly believe the dragon was so well hidden that he hadn't even seen it. He wondered if it had seen him dive behind a boulder. At least for the moment, it didn't seem so. He searched about for a way to escape, but the terrain was too open to run without being seen. The sound of the horse being eaten made his stomach turn. At last, it ended. He wondered if dragons took naps after they ate. There were a few snorts. The snorts came closer. Richard tried to make himself smaller. Talons rasped over the boulder he was hiding behind and lifted it right off the ground, tossing it aside. Richard looked up into piercing yellow eyes. Almost everything else was an intense red. The head, with flexible, black-tipped spikes around the base of the jaw and on the back of its skull behind the ears, was at the end of a long, thick neck rising from an immense body. The sinewy tail terminated in black-tipped spikes, like the ones on the head, only stiff, hard. The tail swished idly, pushing rocks aside. As it flexed its wings, powerful muscles rippled beneath the glossy, red interlocking scales on its shoulders. Razor-sharp teeth, stained red from its recent meal, sprouted just inside the snarling lips and lined the long muzzle. The beast snorted. Smoke rose from nostrils at the end of the tapered snout.
"What have we here?"
came a decidedly female voice.
"A tasty treat?"
Richard sprang to his feet and drew the sword, sending its ring into the air. "I need your help."
"Only too glad to help you, little man, but not until after I eat you."
"I'm warning you, stay back. This sword has magic."
"Magic?"
The dragon gasped in mock fright. It put a claw to its breast.
"Oh, please, brave man, don't slay me with your magic sword."
It made a smoky rumble that Richard took for laughter. Richard kept the sword out, but felt suddenly foolish. "You intend to eat me, then?"
"Well, I must admit, more for the amusement than the taste."
"I had heard red dragons were an independent sort, but that you are little more than a lapdog to Dark and Rawl." A ball of flame boiled from the mouth, rising into the air. "I thought you might like to be free of your bonds and be independent once more." The head, bigger than he, Richard was frightened to note, came closer to within a few yards. Its ears swiveled forward. A glossy red tongue, split at the end like a snake's, slithered out toward him, making a curious investigation. Richard held the sword out of the way as the tongue raked up his body from his crotch to his throat. It was a gentle touch for a dragon, yet it knocked him back a few steps.
And how would a little man like you be able to do that?
I'm trying to stop Darkin Rahl. Kill him. If you helped me, then you would be free. The dragon threw its head up, smoke puffing from its nostrils as it rumbled in laughter. The ground shook. It looked down at him, blinked, then threw its head back again, rumbling in laughter once more. The rumbling died out, and the head returned, the eyebrows bunching up in an angry frown.
I don't think so. I don't think I would like to put my fate in a little man like you. I would rather put my future in continuing to serve Master Rahl.
It made a grunt, blowing small clouds of dust away to the sides at Richard's feet.
The entertainment is over. Time for my tasty treat.
All right. I'm prepared to die.
Richard had to think of a stall, to give himself time to think, why would a red dragon be at the service of Darkin Rahl?
But before you eat me, may I tell you something first?
Speak,
the dragon snorted.
But make it short.
I'm from Westland. I've never seen a dragon before. I always thought they would be fearsome creatures, and I must admit, you certainly are fearsome. But there is one thing I wasn't prepared for.
And what would that be?
You are, without a doubt, the most stunningly beautiful creature I have ever seen.
It was the truth. Despite the deadly nature of it, it was strikingly beautiful. The neck of the dragon made itself into an S shape as it pulled its head back, blinking in surprise. The eyes frowned a little, doubting.
It's true, Richard said. I'm to be eaten. I have no reason to lie.
You are beautiful. I never thought I would see anything as magnificent as you. Do you have a name?
Scarlet. Scarlet. What a lovely name. Are all red dragons as stunning as you, or are you special?
Scarlet put a claw to her breast.
That would not be for me to say.
The head snaked its way toward him again.
I have never had a man I was about to eat tell me such a thing.
An idea began forming in Richard's mind. He put the sword back in its scabbard.
Scarlet, I know a creature as proud as you would not be at the beck of anyone, much less one as demanding as Darkin Rahl unless there was terrible need. You are too beautiful and noble a creature for that.
Scarlet's head floated closer.
Why would you say such things to me?
Because I believe in the truth. I think you do too.
What is your name?
Richard Cipher. I am the Seeker.
Scarlet put a black-tipped talon to her teeth.
Seeker,
she frowned.
I don't believe I've ever eaten a Seeker before.
A strange dragon's smile crossed her lips.
It will be a treat. Our talk is over, Richard Cipher. Thank you for the compliment.
The head floated closer, the lips pulling back in a snarl.
Darkin Rahl stole your egg, didn't he?
Scarlet pulled back. She blinked at him, then threw her head back, jaws wide. An ear-splitting roar made the scales on her throat vibrate. Fire shot skyward in a booming blast. The sound echoed off the cliff walls, causing little rock slides. Scarlet's head whipped back to him, smoke rising from the nostrils.
What do you know about that?
I know that a proud creature such as you would not subject yourself to such demeaning duties, except for one reason, to protect something important, like her young.
So you know, that will not save you,
she snarled.
I also know where Darkin Rahl is keeping your egg.
Where?
Richard had to dive to the side to avoid the flames.
Tell me where it is.
I thought you wanted to eat me now. One eye came close.
Someone should teach you not to be flippant, she rumbled.
Sorry, Scarlet. It's a bad habit that has brought me to grief in the past. Look, if I help you get your egg back, then Rahl would have no hold on you. If I could do that, would it be worth helping me?
Helping you how?
Well, you fly Rahl around. That's what I need. I need you to fly me around for a few days. Help me look for some friends of mine so I can protect them from Rahl. I need to be able to cover a lot of ground, search a lot of area. I think if I could do it from the sky, like a bird, I could find them and have enough time to stop Rawl. I don't like flying men about. It's humiliating. 6 days from now, it will all be over, one way or another. If you help me, that's all I would need. After that, it won't matter one way or the other. How long will you have to serve Rawl if you don't help me?
All right. Tell me where my egg is, and I will let you go, let you live.
How would you know I was telling the truth? I could just invent a place to save myself.
Like dragons, real seekers have honor. That much I know. So if you really know, tell me, and I will free you.
No.
No!
Scarlet roared.
What do you mean, no?
I don't care about my life. Just as you, I care about things more important. If you want me to help you get your egg back, then you will have to agree to help me save the ones I care about. We will get the egg first, then you help me. I think it more than a fair trade. The life of your offspring in exchange for flying me about for a few days. Scarlet's piercing yellow eye came close to his face. Her ears swiveled forward.
And how do you know that once I have my egg, I will keep my end of the bargain?
Because, Richard whispered, you know what it is like to fear for the safety of another, and you have honor. I have no choice. I don't know any other way to save my friends from living the rest of their lives as you are living now, under the heel of Darkin Rawl. I will be putting my life at great risk to save your egg. I believe you to be a creature of honor. I will trust your word with my life. Scarlet gave a snort, backing away a little, peering at him. She folded her huge wings against herself. Her tail swished about, knocking stones and a few small boulders skidding across the ground. Richard waited. One arm came forward, a single black-tipped talon, thick as his leg, sharp as his sword point, hooked through the sword's baldric, gave a snug pull. Her head came close.
Bargain struck. On your honor, on mine, Scarlet hissed. But I have not given my word. I will not eat you at the end of the 6 days.
If you help me save my friends and stop Rawl, I don't care what you do to me after that. Scarlet snorted. Are short-tailed gars a threat to dragons? The dragon unhooked her talon from him.
Gars! She spat the name. I have eaten enough of them. They are no match for me. Not unless there were 8 or 10 together. But gars don't like to gather together in numbers, so that's not a problem.
It's a problem now. When I saw your egg, there were dozens of gars around it. Scarlet gave a grunt, and tongues of flame licked out between her teeth.
Dozens? That many could pull me from the sky, especially if I were carrying my egg.
Richard smiled. That's why you need me. I will think of a plan. Zed screamed. Kalin and Chase both jerked back. Kalin's brow wrinkled. He had never done this before when he had sought out the Nightstone. The sun was already down, but in the fading light she could see his skin was nearly as white as his hair. She grasped him by the shoulders.
Zed, what is it?
He didn't answer. His head fell to the side as his eyes rolled back. He still wasn't breathing, but that much was normal. He hadn't breathed in the past when he sought the Nightstone. She exchanged a worried glance with Chase. Kalin could feel Zed shivering under her hands. She shook him again.
Zed! Stop it! Come back!
He gave a gasp, whispered something. Kalin put her ear by his mouth. He whispered again. Kalin was horrified.
Zed, I can't do that to you!
What did he say?
Chase demanded. She looked up at the Boundary Warden, her eyes wide in fear.
He said to touch him with my power.
Underworld!
Zed gasped.
Only way!
Zed, what's happening?
I'm trapped,
he whispered.
Touch me, or I'm lost. Hurry.
You'd better do as he says, Chase warned.
Kalin didn't like that idea one bit.
Zed, I can't do that to you.
It's the only way to break the hold. Hurry.
Do it, Chase bellowed. There's no time to argue.
May the court spirits forgive me,
she whispered as she closed her eyes. She felt trapped by panic. She had no choice. Dreading what she was going to do, her mind fell silent, calm. In the calm, she relaxed her restraint. She felt her power build, taking her breath away. Released, the power slammed into the wizard. There was a hard impact to the air all about, thunder with no sound. Pine needles rained down all about. Leaning over them, Chase gave a little grunt of pain. He was closer than he should have been. Silence fell over the woods. Still, the wizard did not breathe. Zed stopped shaking. His eyes came down. He blinked a few times. His hands came up, and he gripped Kalin's arms. With a gasp, he took a breath.
"Thank you, dear one," he managed through the deep breaths.
Kalin was surprised at the power. The magic didn't seem to have taken him. It should have. She was relieved it hadn't, but astonished.
"Zed, are you all right?"
The wizard gave a nod.
"Thanks to you. But if you hadn't been here, or had waited any longer, I would have been trapped in the underworld. Your power has brought me back."
"Why didn't it change you?"
Zed straightened his robes, seeming a little embarrassed at his helpless predicament.
"Because of where I was."
He held his chin up.
"And because I'm a wizard of the First Order. I used your confessor's power as a lifeline to find my way back. It was like a beacon of light in the darkness. I followed it back without letting it touch me."
"What were you doing in the underworld?"
Chase asked before she had a chance. Zed gave a cross look to the boundary warden and didn't answer. Kalin's worry surged.
"Zed, answer the question. This never happened before. Why were you pulled into the underworld?"
"When I seek the Nightstone, part of me goes to it. That's how I find it and can tell where it is."
Kalin tried not to think of what he was saying.
"But the Nightstone is still in Dahara. Richard is still in Dahara."
She grabbed fists full of his robes.
"Zed."
Zed's eyes went to the ground.
"The Nightstone is no longer in Dahara. It's in the underworld."
His angry eyes came up to her.
"But that doesn't mean Richard is not still in Dahara. It doesn't mean anything has happened to him, only the Nightstone."
With a strained expression, Chase turned to setting up the camp before darkness fell. Kalin still held Zed's robes, frozen in terror.
"Zed, please, could you be wrong?"
He shook his head slowly.
"The Nightstone is in the underworld. But, dear one, that doesn't mean Richard is. Don't let your fear run away with you."
Kalin nodded as she felt tears run down her cheeks.
"Zed, he has to be all right. He has to. If Rawl has kept him there this long, he wouldn't kill him now."
"We don't even know that Rawl has him."
She knew he just didn't want to admit it out loud. Why else would he be at the People's Palace if Darkin Rawl didn't have him?
"Zed, when you sought the Nightstone before, you said you could feel him, that he was alive."
She almost couldn't bring herself to ask, could hardly get the words out, afraid of what he might say.
"Did you sense him in the underworld?"
He looked into her eyes a long time.
"I didn't sense him. But I don't know if I would, if he were in the underworld. If he were dead."
When she started crying, he pulled her against him, hugging her head to his shoulder.
"But I think it was only the Nightstone there. I think Rawl was trying to trap me there. He must have gotten the Nightstone from Richard, must have sent it to the underworld to snare me."
"We're still going after him," she cried. "I'm not turning back."
"Well, of course we are."
Kalin felt a warm tongue on the back of her hand. She stroked the wolf's fur, smiled over at him.
"We'll find him, Mistress Kalin. Don't you worry, we'll find him."
"Rofi's right," Chase called over his shoulder. "I'm even looking forward to the lecture we'll be getting about coming after him."
"The box is safe," the wizard said. "That's what matters. 5 days from tomorrow is the first day of winter, and then Darkin Rawl will be dead. We will have Richard back after that, if not before."
"I'll get us there before then, if that's what you're getting at," Chase grumbled.
Chapter 45. Richard held the thick spines on Scarlet's shoulders in a death grip as she made a banking turn to the left. He had learned, much to his amazement, that when she leaned into a turn, it didn't make him slide off the side, but pressed him harder against her. Richard found the experience of flying at once exhilarating and frightening, like standing on the edge of an impossibly high cliff that moved. The feel of her body lifting him into the air made him grin. Muscles flexed beneath him as she stroked the air with her powerful wings, each beat giving a lift. When she folded her wings back and dove toward the ground, the wind made his eyes water, and the feeling of falling took his breath away and made him feel as though his stomach would rise inside him. He marveled at the very idea of riding a dragon.
"Do you see them?"
he called out over the sound of the wind. Scarlet gave a grunt to indicate that she did. In the fading light, the gars looked like black dots moving about on the rocky ground below. Steam trailed up from Fire Spring, and even this high up, Richard could smell the acrid fumes. Scarlet rose steeply into the air, making his legs press against her as she lifted them higher. Then she rolled into a sharp bank to the right.
"There are far too many," she called back.
Her head tilted behind, one yellow eye peering at him. Richard pointed.
"Go down there, behind those hills, and don't let them see us."
Scarlet climbed with strong strokes. When they were higher than they had been so far, she glided away from Fire Spring. She swooped down between the rocky slopes, threading her way back toward where Richard had told her to land. With a silent flutter of wings, she gently settled on the ground near the mouth of a cave and lowered her neck so he could climb down. Richard knew she didn't want him on her back any longer than necessary. Her head swung around toward him, her eyes angry, impatient.
"There are too many gars. Doc and Roll knows I can't fight that many. That's why there are so many there, in case I ever found my egg. You said you would think of a plan. What is it?"
Richard glanced over at the mouth of the cave. The Shadrin's cave, Kaelin had told him. "We need a diversion. Something to distract them while we get the egg."
"While you get the egg,"
Scarlet corrected, with a little flame to make her point. He looked over at the cave again.
"One of my friends told me the cave goes all the way through to where the egg is. Maybe I could go through, snatch the egg, and bring it back."
"Get going."
"Shouldn't we discuss if it's a good idea? Maybe we could think of something better. I've also heard there might be something in the cave."
Scarlet brought her angry eye closer to him.
"Something in the cave."
She snaked her head around to the opening and sent a horrific blast of fire into the darkness. Her head came back.
"Now there's nothing in the cave. Go get my egg."
The cave was miles long. Richard knew the fire wouldn't have harmed anything farther back. He also knew he had given his word. Collecting cane reeds growing nearby, he bound them together with a sinewy vine into several bundles. He held one bundle up to Scarlet as she watched him.
"Light the end of this for me?"
The dragon pursed her lips and blew a thin stream of flame across the end of the cane reeds.
"You wait here," he told her. "Sometimes it's better to be small than big. I won't be spotted so easily. I'll think of something and get the egg and bring it back through the cave. It's a long way. It may take until morning before I'm back. I don't know how close the guards will be behind me, so we might need to leave in a hurry. Stay sharp, all right?"
He hooked his pack over a spine on her back.
"Keep this for me. I don't want to carry more than I have to."
Richard didn't know if a dragon could look worried, but he thought she did.
"Be careful with the egg. It will hatch soon, but if the shell is broken now, before it is time..."
Richard gave her a reassuring smile.
"Don't worry, Scarlet. We're going to get it back."
She waddled to the cave entrance behind him, poking her head in, watching him disappear inside.
"Richard Cipher,"
she called after him, her voice echoing.
"If you try to run away, I'll find you. And if you come back without the egg, you will wish the gods had killed you, because I will cook you slow, starting at your feet."
Richard stared back at the hulk filling the cave entrance.
I've given my word. If the guards get me, I'll try to kill enough of them so you can get the egg and escape.
Scarlet grunted.
Try not to let that happen. I still want to eat you when this is done.
Richard smiled and went into the darkness. The blackness swallowed up the light of the torch, making him feel as if he were walking into nothingness. Only a small spot of ground before him was lit. As he went on, the floor of the cave sloped downward, descending into cold, still air. A ceiling of rock appeared, and walls, as the way narrowed into a tunnel that snaked deeper. The tunnel opened into a huge room. The path led along a narrow ledge at the edge of a still green lake. Flickering torchlight showed a jagged ceiling and walls of smooth stone. The ceiling sloped downward as he went on into a wide, low passage. He had to bend over to pass through. For a good hour he walked, hunched over, his neck starting to hurt from holding it sideways. Occasionally, he pressed the torch to the rock ceiling to shed its ash and keep it burning brightly. The darkness was oppressive. It surrounded him, followed him, sucked him deeper, calling him onward with unseen sights. Delicate, colorful formations of rock grew like vegetation, flowering and blossoming from solid rock. Sparkling crystals flashed at him as he passed with the torch, its flame the only sound, echoing back to him from the blackness. Richard went through rooms of astounding beauty. Into the darkness rose immense columns of rippled stone, some ending before they reached their destination, with mates hanging down, trying to meet them halfway. Crystalline sheets flowed over the walls in places like melted jewels. Some passages were clefts in the rock he had to squeeze through, others holes he had to traverse on hands and knees. The air had an odd lack of smell. This was a place of perpetual night. No light, nothing alive ever touched it. As he walked on and on, warm from the effort, the chill of the air made steam rise from his skin. When he held the torch near his other hand, he could see vapor rise from each finger, like life's energy draining away. Although it wasn't frigid, the way winter was frigid, it was the kind of cold that would bleed a person of all their heat if they stayed here long enough. A slow, sucking death. Without the light, he would be lost in a matter of minutes. This was a place that could kill the unwary or the unlucky. Richard checked the torch and extra cane reeds often. Eternal night wore on slowly. Richard's legs were tired from the constant climbing and descending. In fact, all of him was tired. He hoped the cave would end soon. It seemed he had walked the whole night. He had no idea of time. The rock closed around him. The flat shelf of the roof lowered until he was walking hunched over again, and lowered more until he was on his hands and knees, the ground cold and wet with slimy mud that smelled of rot. It was the first thing he had smelled in a long time. His hands were cold with the wet, stinking mud. The way diminished to a single, small opening, a black hole in the torchlight. Richard didn't like how small it looked. Air moaned through the passage, making the flame flap and whip. He held the torch into the hole, but could see nothing but blackness beyond. He pulled back the torch, wondering what he should do. It was an awfully small hole, flat on the top and bottom, and he had no idea how long it was or what was through on the other side. Air was coming through, so it must lead to the other end of the cave, to the gars, the egg, but he didn't like how small it was. Richard backed away. There might be other routes from farther back in one of the other rooms, but how much time could he waste searching, only to fail? He came back to the hole, staring at it with rising dread. Trying not to think about his fear, he took off the sword, held it with the spare reeds and torch out ahead of himself, and pushed into the hole. He was immediately frightened of the way the rock pressed against him, top and bottom. arms straight out, head turned sideways, he wriggled his way in deeper. The closeness increased, making him wiggle and snake his way, inches at a time, cold stone pressed against his back and chest. He couldn't take a deep breath. The smoke from the torch burned his eyes. He squeezed deeper, tighter. He rocked his shoulders forward and back, pulling one leg a few inches, then the other, feeling like a snake trying to shed its skin. The torch showed only blackness ahead. Anxiety gripped him. Just get through, he told himself. Just push ahead and get through. With the toes of his boots braced against rock, Richard gave himself a push as he wiggled. The push wedged him tight. He tried to push again. He didn't move. Angry, he pushed harder. Still, he didn't move. Panic ignited in him. He was stuck. Rock was pressing his chest and back together, and he could hardly get a breath. He envisioned the mountain of rock that was pressing on his back, unimaginable weight towering above him. Fearful, he wiggled and squirmed, trying to back up, but couldn't. He tried to grasp something with his hands to get leverage to push back against. It didn't help. He was stuck. Panting, he couldn't get enough breath. He felt as if he were suffocating, his lungs burning for air, as if he were drowning, unable to breathe. Tears filled his eyes, and fear gripped his throat. His toes scraped at the rock, trying to move him one way or the other. He didn't budge. The way his arms were pinned ahead of him reminded him of the way Denna had kept him in the shackles. Helpless, not being able to move his arms made it worse. Cold sweat covered his face. He started gasping in panic, feeling as if the rock were moving, pressing harder. Hopeless, he wanted someone to help him. There was no one who could. With a grunt of desperate effort, he moved ahead a few inches. That only made it worse, tighter. He heard himself crying in hysteria, gasping for air, felt the rock crushing him. Master Rawl, guide us. Master Rawl, teach us. Master Rawl, protect us. In your light we thrive. In your mercy we are sheltered. In your wisdom we are humbled. We live only to serve. Our lives are yours. He chanted the devotion over and over, focusing his mind on it until his breathing slowed, until he was calm once more. He was still stuck, but at least his mind was working again. Something touched his leg. His eyes went wide. It was a tentative, timid touch. Richard kicked his leg. At least, he kicked it as best he could in the confines of the hole. It was more of a jerk. The touch left. It came back. Richard froze. This time, it went up inside his pant leg. Cold, wet, slimy. Slithering, the hard-tipped thing worked up his leg, caressing his skin to the inside of his thigh. Richard kicked and jerked his leg again. This time it didn't leave. The tip moved in probing touches. Something along the length of it pinched his skin. Panic threatened to take him again, but he fought it back. Now he had no choice. Richard expelled the air from his lungs, having had the thought before but having been afraid to try it. When his lungs were empty and he was as small as he could make himself, he pushed with his toes, pulled with his fingers, and wriggled with his body. He moved ahead about a foot. It was tighter yet. He couldn't inhale. It hurt. He fought to keep the panic down. His fingers felt something. An edge of the opening, maybe. Maybe the opening to the hole he was in. He squeezed even more air out of his lungs. The thing gripped his leg painfully, urgently. He heard an angry, clicking growl. He pulled with his fingers, seizing the edge, and pushed with his toes. He moved ahead. His elbows were up to the edge. Something sharp along the length of the thing on his leg, sharp like little cat's claws, sank into his flesh. Richard couldn't cry out. He squeezed ahead. Fire burned into the flesh of his leg. The torch, cane reeds, and his sword fell away. Clattering, the sword slid down the rock. Using his elbows for leverage, he squeezed the upper half of his body through the opening, gasping for air in deep drafts. The hooks pulled his leg. Richard wriggled the rest of the way out of the hole, sliding, falling headfirst down steep, smooth rock. The torch burned on the curving bottom of the egg-shaped chamber. His sword was just beyond it. As he slid headfirst, his hands out in front, he stretched for his sword. The hooked claws in the flesh of his leg brought him up short, holding him upside down. Richard screamed out in pain, the sound echoing around the chamber. He couldn't reach the sword. painfully. Slowly, he was dragged back up by claws in his leg. They tore the flesh. He screamed again. Another appendage slipped up the other pant leg, feeling his calf muscle with its hard tip. Richard pulled his knife and twisted himself in half to reach the thing that held him. Over and over he drove the blade into it. From deep in the hole came a high-pitched squeal. The claws retracted. Richard fell, sliding along the rock, coming to a stop next to the torch. Grasping the scabbard in one hand, he drew the sword as snake-like appendages came out of the hole, wriggling about in the air, searching. They probed their way down the rock toward him. Richard swung the sword, lopping off several of the arms. With a howl, they all whipped back into the hole. There was a low growl from the depths of the blackness. In the flickering light of the torch that lay on the stone floor, he could see a bulk squeezing out of the opening, expanding as it exited. He couldn't reach it with the sword, but he knew he didn't want to let it into the chamber with him. An arm whipped around his waist, lifting him. He let it. An eye peered down, glistening in the torchlight. He saw wet teeth. As the arm pulled him toward the teeth, he drove the sword through the eye. There was a howl. The arm released him. He slid to the bottom once more. The whole creature pulled back into the hole, and the arms whipped about, yanked in after it. The howls faded back into the distant darkness and were gone. Richard sat on the floor, shaking, running his fingers through his hair. At last, his breathing slowed and his fear settled. He felt his leg. Blood soaked his pants. He decided there was nothing he could do about it right now. He had to get the egg first. Dim light came from across the chamber. Following the large tunnel on the other side, he came at last to the opening of the cave. Faint light of dawn and the chirping of birds greeted him. Below, he could see dozens of gars prowling about. Richard settled behind a rock to rest. He could see the egg below, with steam rising around it. He could also see that the egg was far too big to carry back through the cave. Besides, he didn't ever want to go into a cave again. What was he going to do if he couldn't carry it back through the cave? It would be light soon. He had to think of an answer. Something bit his leg. He smacked it. It was a blood fly. He groaned to himself. Now the gars would find him. They were being drawn by the blood. He had to think of something. A second fly bit him, and he had a thought. Quickly, he took the knife and cut off strips of the wet, blood-soaked pant leg. He used them to wipe the blood off his leg, then tied a rock on the end of each. Richard put the birdman's whistle between his lips and blew hard as he could. He blew over and over. Picking up a strip of cloth tied to a rock, he swung it in a circle over his head, letting go, letting it sail out and down, among the gars. He threw the blood-soaked strips farther and farther to his right into the trees. He couldn't hear them, but he knew the blood flies were roused. That much fresh blood would have them in a feeding frenzy. Birds, hungry birds, a few at first, then hundreds, then thousands, swooped and dived down on Fire Spring, eating flies as they went. There was mass confusion. Gars howled as the birds swooped up and pecked flies off their bellies or snatched them from the air. Gars were running everywhere. Some took to the air. For every bird a gar caught out of the air, 100 took its place. Richard ran down the hill in a crouch from rock to rock. There was no worry of being heard. The birds were making far too much noise for that. The gars were frantic, swinging at the birds, chasing them, howling and screaming. The air was thick with feathers. If only the birdman could see this, he thought, smiling. Richard broke from the rock and ran toward the egg. In the chaos, gars began falling on one another, ripping and tearing. One saw him. He ran it through with the sword. The next, he only cut off at the knees. It fell to the ground, howling. Another came, and he took off a wing, and yet another, both arms. He deliberately didn't kill them, but let them flap around on the ground, howling, screaming, to add to the mayhem. In the disorder, gars that saw him didn't even attack, but he did. He killed two by the egg. With his forearms, he lifted the egg from its resting place. It was hot, but not hot enough to burn. The egg was heavier than he expected, and it took both arms to carry it. Wasting no time, he ran to the left toward the gully between the hills. Birds flew in every direction, some crashing into him. It was chaos. Two gars came for him. He set down the egg, killed the first, and took the legs off the second. He ran with the egg as fast as he could without risking a fall. Another gar came. He missed with the first swing, but ran it through when it leapt for him. Breathing hard with the effort, Richard ran between the hills. His arms were painfully weary from the weight of the egg. Gars landed about him, their green eyes enraged. He set down the egg and swung at the first gar to come, taking off part of a wing and its head. With howls, the others rushed him. Trees and rocks all about lit with bright light as flame incinerated several of the beasts. Richard looked up and saw Scarlet hovering over his head, beating her giant wings and raking everything around him with flame. She reached down with one claw, snatched up the egg, reached down with the other, gripped his middle, and lifted him away. They took to the air as two gars came for him. One he caught with the sword, the other burst into flame and fell away. Scarlet roared in anger at the gars as she lifted into the sky with Richard hanging from her claw. He decided that this wasn't his favorite way to fly, but it was still better than being back with the gars. Another gar came up from underneath, reaching for the egg. Richard whacked off a wing. It spun, howling toward the ground. No more came. Scarlet carried him high into the air, up and away from Fire Spring. Hanging in her claw, he felt like a meal being taken back to the young. Her grip was hurting his ribs a little, but he didn't complain. He didn't want her to loosen her hold on him. It was a long way down. They flew for hours. Richard managed to rearrange himself and get a little more comfortable in her talons as he watched the hills and trees pass below. He saw streams and fields, even a few small towns. The hills grew, becoming rocky as if the stone were sprouting from the landscape. Jagged rock cliffs and peaks rose up before them. Stroking the air smoothly, Scarlet lifted them higher, over rock Richard thought would scrape his feet. She took them into a desolate land, barren of life. Brown and gray stone looked to have been haphazardly stacked up by a giant, like coins on a table, into thin columns, some singular, others clumped in bunches, still more having toppled. Beyond and above the columns of rock stood massive, craggy stone cliffs, riddled with splits and cracks, shelves and projections. A few clouds drifted past the face of the cliffs. Scarlet banked toward a wall of rock. It seemed to Richard that they would run smack into it, but before they did, she brought them up short with a fluttering of her huge wings, setting him on a ledge before landing herself. At the back of the ledge was an opening into the rock. Scarlet squeezed her bulk through. In the back, in the cool darkness, was a nest of rock where she placed the egg, then breathed fire over it. Richard watched as she stroked the egg with a claw, turning it gently, inspecting it, cooing to it. She played fire gently over the egg, turning her head, listening, watching. "Is it all right?" Richard asked quietly. Her head turned to him, a dreamy look in her yellow eyes. "Yes, it is well." Richard nodded. "I'm glad, Scarlet. I really am." He started toward her as she lay down next to the egg. Her head came up in warning. He halted. "I just want my pack. It's hanging on a spike on your shoulder." "Sorry. Go ahead." Richard retrieved the pack and went to the side, against the wall, a little closer to the light. He glanced over the ledge. It looked to be thousands of feet down. Richard fervently hoped Scarlet was a dragon of her word. He sat down and pulled out a fresh pair of pants. He found something else, too, the jar from Denna's room. Inside was some of the alm cream he had made when Rawl had hurt her. She must have taken what was left over and put it in his pack. Looking down at the Aegil, he smiled sadly at the memory of her. How could he care about someone who had done those things to him? He had forgiven her. That was how. Forgiven her with the white magic. The alm cream felt wonderful. He let out a little moan. It cooled the burning of his wounds, soothed the pain. Richard said a silent thank you to Denna for putting it in his pack. He took off the shredded remnants of his pants.
You look funny without your pants.
Richard spun around. Scarlet was watching him.
Those are not reassuring words for a man to hear from a female, even if the female is a dragon.